This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, CEO and founder of Brightly, the number one destination for conscious consumers around the world. At Good Together, we value the planet over perfection and believe that you can make positive things happen for the planet every day by being a conscious consumer and an informed citizen. Listen in as I chat with various experts about living and consuming responsibly. Living should be easy, but oftentimes it doesn't quite feel like that. Brightly believes that small, planet-focused lifestyle swaps can help us all fight back against climate change every single day. Part of being a conscious consumer means that when it's time to buy a new item, considering a product that is eco-friendlier than the alternative can actually make a difference. Brightly Shop focuses on easy, effective eco products designed to help you reduce waste and make smart, planet-focused decisions around your house every day, whether it's stopping food waste with our Veggie Saver bag or eliminating single-use plastic wrap with our bowl covers. Pick from dozens of our favorite eco swaps that have been thoroughly vetted and tested by our team, including yours truly, who has just done so much testing. So head to brightly.eco/shop and use code GOODTOGETHER to receive 20% off your first order with us. Good Together listeners, I am thrilled to welcome Graham Hill to the podcast today because I would call him one of the OG influencers in the environmental sort of internet field. So Graham has been around for more than 20 years from founding the website Tree Hugger, you've probably heard of that one, in 2004 with a mission to take green mainstream, to the creation of Life Edited, a design-minded concept centering around space efficiency and less stuff. I would definitely call Graham something of a pioneer in the sustainability space. So now he's working at a new company called Carbonauts, which he founded, and he's helping clients like Amazon, Chanel, AT&T, Netflix, et cetera. He's really focused on helping these big companies cut carbon emissions. So this is just a really interesting journey that we're going to talk about from, I think, the consumer angle all the way up to the big corporation angle. So welcome, Graham. And I wonder if you could just give people a brief intro about yourself.
Cool. Thanks very much. I'm excited to talk to you. And brief intro. I am an undercover Canadian. I grew up near Montreal in the Eastern Townships. I studied architecture. I got an architecture degree at Carleton in Ottawa. And then I did a couple of years of product design. And I guess I call myself a designpreneur in that I have a bunch of design background, as I just shared. But I basically ended up being an entrepreneur. I fell in love with the internet in sort of 93, 94, and started a company with my cousin Tish Hill in Seattle in 95. So one of the first web companies. And we did a lot of work for Microsoft and other big companies, grew it to 60 people and sold it. And so I've sort of been really an entrepreneur since then. And I think that's probably a brief.
Yeah.
I've been since 2000 really focused on, I guess, more of a social impact entrepreneur. So largely environment. And that's what excites me. And I'm, very fortunate to have had some business success. So I was able to be really choosy with what I wanted to do. And yeah, that's what drives me. That's what gets me out of bed every day.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love to hear early internet stories. And I love that you were, early here in Seattle, right? Because obviously most people know Seattle from Microsoft and Amazon. And I think I'm based in Seattle now myself and, I spent some time in the Bay Area, but to me, Seattle has a really interesting nexus of, tech combined with people who are really interested in the environmental impact of things, right? Whether or not the companies make that like a big part of their mission, or you have players like Amazon coming out and doing things like naming the arena here, the Climate Pledge Arena. So we'll probably talk about that in a second around, really what some of the steps that these big corporations are taking. But tell us a little bit about, so you founded your company and then sold it. What inspired you to start Tree Hugger? And like, why that time? Like, why that medium?
So in 2000, as I was mentioning, I was able to be choosy about what I wanted to do. And I was really, books are incredible. And so I was really influenced by a bunch. I was just reading a lot. And I read one called The Beak of the Finch, which is about evolution in the Galapagos. And then I read Natural Capitalism. And Natural Capitalism, an early Paul Hawkins and Amory Levins, maybe Hunter as well, can't remember. Was very influential. I just was very excited. And Natural Capitalism, for those that haven't read it, the big idea is basically that you could do well by doing good. And so that you could, just create a really world positive company and actually make money. And that was really inspiring to me. And I sensed that business is really what drives us in a big way. And so that was a really unique way of looking at things. And so that's what sort of got me excited about the space.
Yeah.
And in 2000, I came up with the idea for Tree Hugger, but only really manifested it in 2004. I worked on a plant-based air filter for a while and did a bunch of other things, had a little environmental group in New York. And basically the technology came along that was the right fit. So a friend of mine, Nick Denton, who did Gawker Media, was very early in blogs. And so he basically was like, you should, he knew I had this predilection and he was like, you should do a blog. And I had been thinking about it for 4 years at that point. And so it was just, it all came together. And I would say that the premise of it, and it's very different now, so it's hard to look at Tree Hugger now compared to what it was then. So at that point, this is 2004, green sustainability was not mainstream in any sense. And the environmental media that existed at that point in time was generally anti this, anti that, so all about sort of stopping stuff. It tended to be hippie, and I love the hippies, but that's a really small percentage of our population and a turnoff for some of the population. It also tended to be partisan. So anti-business, partisan, and really not design forward. And so I saw this incredible green future out there from my research on the internet and my readings, et cetera. And so, but there was really no place you could see it. And so I wanted to really make a place where people could see that incredible green future, get really inspired, and ideally get into it. And so that's really what Tree Hugger came from. Tree Hugger is, of course, a tongue-in-cheek name.
Yes, it is.
Was actually not, and I love the Tree Huggers, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But Tree Hugger was very much not Tree Hugger. So there was a little wink there. We were very designed forward. And the idea was that you could wear a collared shirt and live in the city and still be an environmentalist. Environmentalism was for everyone. And then we needed to make it more mainstream, more contemporary. And so that was the real thinking. And blog technology came along. And I tend to be fairly aggressive with the things that I do. And so we put together a really cool site and pushed very hard. And because it was such a new approach to things, we were very quickly the biggest green site on the web.
Yeah.
So for a number of years there, we were very much the center of all this stuff. And so, and that's, relevant in that at that point, it was about mainstreaming green. It was about building awareness. We just weren't there.
Yeah,
and what's interesting is the movement has done a great job. So we're there now. We have really high awareness, which is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many things that are interesting to me about this approach. But remind me again, what was the concept you were just talking about around capitalism and being able to create good for the world at the same time? What was the book?
Natural Capitalism.
Natural Capitalism. That's amazing. I also very much believe in that, and I believe that, we, especially here in the United States, but globally as well,
at the end of the day, the biggest influences that are, you know, driving change, both positive and negative, are these big corporations, our companies. And, you know, as much as we'd like to rely on governments to, you know, create policies to better the planet, it's a slow bureaucratic process. So I am very much a believer in, you know, using the power of capitalism to help change the world alongside governments, right? Like, you can't have one without the other. But I'm curious to know a little bit too, as you started Tree Hugger, you know, so yes, you quickly became the biggest, you know, space online for everything green. How did you think about the, like, the reporting and the editorial aspect? Like, were you all of a sudden, you were like, you know, setting up a newsroom? And like, how did you think about that kind of in the early internet days?
Well, so what was fascinating, looking back now, is like, I literally was trying to hire writers, and I would be asking them to, like, basically saying, you'll need to find something to write up about every day. And they would push back, like, the concept that there would be some cool green stuff to report on daily just seemed like a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Because they probably weren't used to that type of news cycle, right? Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was early. And it just was so early in the space. And so a cut to, you know, probably 2 years later, we were posting 80, 100 things a day. Like, it turns out there, it really took off, and there was tons to report on. And so, yeah, it was, you know, it was a fairly simple idea. Just we ended up having a newsletter, but mostly it was about going to the blog site, and we wanted to have something on a daily basis. And I'm not sure if they're still doing it daily, but I'm sure they're doing it during the work week. But probably since then, 18 years ago, there's been you know, very, very regular content. So we were open. It was product design, it was fashion, it was architecture, it was environmental news. It was quite broad because we were so early. And then, you know, later on, stuff got much more niche. There was the green EV site. There was one that was focused on plant-based eating kind of thing. It got all niched out later.
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense. And you know, that is, I think, what was so cool. I think so. I was an early reader of Tree Hugger myself, and I did love the fact that there were so many areas that you covered. It wasn't just, here's some, you know, wonky, you know, climate information or, you know, anything like that. So, you know, I loved it. Another thing I was going to mention too. So we kind of talked about, like, the genesis of the site and everything. And then eventually you sold to the Discovery Channel. Is that right? Tell us a little bit about how that came around.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were in a good place because it was an advertising model, and we made good money, and we were the biggest green site on the web. And so, we were an interesting target for various companies. And I'm not much of a manager. I'm much more of I'm a nothing to something guy. I like sort of coming up with an idea and figuring out how to bring it into reality and getting it to work. At a certain point, you got a much larger team and you know, a C-suite and all that kind of stuff. Not really my thing generally, and so Discovery came calling because they have a lot of TV channels, and I think they had a travel channel that wasn't going well, and so they but it's important real estate, so they wanted to do something with it, and they were interested in green, and so they wanted to launch Planet Green, basically green TV channel. And so we were a great way to gain some credibility and gain some talent in order to put that together, and so just as a natural fit. And, so at that point I was like, I'm good. I went from nothing to something. This thing is going really well. It's a little bit more sort of incremental design from here on out and management. And that's not really my thing. And so perfect. What a great partner to take this forward. And Discovery was terrific. Love the people there. David Zaslav is still there, was terrific and very supportive. And they took really good care of it. So I worked for them for a while. And then they ended up doing a joint venture with Mother Nature News, MNN.
Cool.
And then later sold it to IAC, which, funny how the world works. There's a division there called Dot Dash Meredith.
Yeah.
And my good friend Neil Vogel runs that. And so Tree Hugger's over there, and they're taking really good care of Tree Hugger. And so it's still going strong. And so, yeah, very happy with how that's all went. And it was terrific to work for Discovery. And also very fun with the Carbonauts. We're actually starting to work with Discovery, and which is now Warner Brothers Discovery.
Okay.
And so that's very exciting. I've always loved the people there. And so, yeah, we're excited. We just got started a few months ago. And
yes. No, and that was going to kind of lead me into my next question. So you've kind of gone from the consumer end, right? Like writing or, you know, supervise the writing of lots of, you know, stories and information that were, hitting consumers, really where they were interested in. And now you've kind of gone to the other side of the equation, which would be working directly with corporations with Carbonauts. So yeah, tell us a little bit about like, you sold Tree Hugger, you probably took a break, we're thinking about your next thing. And then it seems that you had this idea to really start to work with the larger corporations to help them actually slash carbon emissions. So tell us a little bit about that, about what you're up to.
Yeah, sounds great. So I worked for the in-between. I built a company called Life Edited, and we worked on small living, which was very fun, and sort of went back to my architecture days. And that was just about this, the idea that if you're smart about how you apply design technology and a little behavior change, that you can create smaller ways of living, less space and less stuff, and that those ways of living would save you some money, would lower your footprint, and would also be a happier way of living. And so I did a ton of like really fun transforming apartments with Murphy beds and transforming furniture and all that sort of stuff. Got one of them on the cover of Dwell.
That's awesome.
Gave a TED talk that has about 6 million views. And so I was focused on that for about a decade.
You were doing that before it was cool, right? You know, tiny houses and stuff. Like, you know, that's such a thing now, but back then it really wasn't.
Yeah, I sort of started like 2009-ish. Yeah, so definitely was ahead on that and did a lot of work. It was really fun, really rewarding. And ultimately, I always knew I didn't want to be an architect, and I thought I wanted to be a real estate developer, but it just wasn't the fit for me. So I sort of went back and made something that's a complement to Tree Hugger. And so one thing the movement has done very well, we talked about this a few minutes ago, was build awareness. So awareness is at a whole different level now than it was back in 2004 when I built Tree Hugger. So that's awesome. Awareness is great. And climate doesn't care about awareness. Climate doesn't care about our feelings. Ultimately, climate is a bit of a physics question. You know, either we're putting too much carbon into the air or we're not. And
yeah.
So I became obsessed with the idea of like, how do we, it doesn't suffice to have great solutions, plant-rich diet options, renewable energy, electric vehicles, if people aren't taking them up. And so I became obsessed with the idea of how do we take this really high level of awareness and move it to action. So we're all about awareness to action. And we started out doing some, I like to say direct to citizen instead of direct to consumer. So direct to citizen kind of stuff. Iterated on these, and basically we give these workshops, these online, live, cameras on, highly interactive workshops where we appeal to people's hearts and heads. And so that was the basic approach. So we did sort of D2C for a while, and then just realized that influencing corporations could be really, really powerful, and also might bring other advantages, such as HR benefits to the table.
Very cool. Yeah. Like it's a bit more of a scalable way, I guess, to approach a problem.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's tough going out there and doing at Google ads and Facebook ads and all that and trying to find people one by one. But you find an evolved company and they can commit and get stuff to happen. And so, yeah, so we ended up starting just focusing on corporations, and that's pretty much what we do. Now, we still have some options that just as of late, or you can sign up on thecarbonauts.com for more of a personal thing, but we basically work for these large companies. And so the idea there is, I mean, I think in terms of where we're going in fighting climate change, it's a yes and.
Absolutely. Yes. All of the things. Yes.
There's a lot of sort of false arguments.
False choices, right? That people force us into.
It should be the government. It should be the corporations. It should be the individual. And it's just like, I don't believe that at all. It's all, we've got a long way to go in a short period of time. We need to all be involved. And, you know, people who say, oh, it's 100 companies responsible for 70% of the, like, well, it's all the companies. Humans love to point fingers, but it's not intellectually honest. Like, the reality is, for most of us, and once in a while people will really opt out, but for most of us, we are those companies. We buy from those companies, we work in those companies, we invest in those companies. Like, it's not like there are very few of us who haven't gained from oil, for example, or from lumber throughout our lives. And so I think it's really disingenuous to try to just sort of point the finger and say it's like, so I think it's everyone. So, but that said, the corporations are very powerful. And the really, really, really great news is that many companies more and more every day are making really significant commitments to fighting climate change, to lowering their overall carbon footprint, measuring scope one, scope two, scope three, and doing something about it. That's awesome. And they say that culture eats strategy.
Interesting. You're saying like, in the corporate world?
Yeah. So you can come up with like a fancy strategy, but your culture is so important. And so it'll just like, that's what actually rules. And so these companies have, many of them have really aggressive goals. We've got to go a long way in a short period of time.
Yep.
And culture eats strategy. So you got to get your culture on board. You got to get everyone rowing in the same direction. And this is at the same time that your average person, you start talking about sustainability and they talk about straws or about packaging and things that we absolutely have to fix, but a small part of the picture. So that's our focus is basically we help companies move their cultures towards cultures of sustainability.
You're doing that through these online courses, is that correct? So basically when companies decide, hey, we're going to utilize the Carbonauts solution, they're basically enabling some of these online courses for their employees, is that right?
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so the trick that we play, a bit of sleight of hand, is just we're appealing to people's natural selfishness. And so we get them largely, and we're doing more and more focus on the company itself, but largely we get their staff to focus on their homes, reducing their footprints at home. And so it's the easiest way to get them engaged. So we help them work on their home lives. And in that process, they get climate literate. They learn it's all applicable to the company itself. And they get enthusiastic because they're taking action in their homes and it just feels good. And so we have these, we get clients to sign up 30 people. So it's cohort based, live, cameras on. And we go through these workshops, sometimes just an hour, sometimes an hour a week for a month or 6 weeks. And we get them to understand this stuff and then make changes. And in that process, they get climate literate, enthusiastic, and they're going to bring all that to work. And so we're helping create the culture that is necessary for them to meet their aggressive sustainability goals.
I love that. And I think it's really interesting because there are, of course, a lot of companies out there that are trying to help the corporations like with the other parts of their carbon emissions, like supply chains and sustainability related goals and all of these things. And I think obviously those are super needed, but I don't think I've heard as much about you know, the employee bit of the equation. And so obviously there are, you know, major advantages to the culture, like you mentioned, when companies are building up these cultures. But I'd also imagine the, you know, certain trends that are happening right now, whether it's work from home or just the general interest in the climate, are very advantageous for companies to be using something like this.
Absolutely. And in fact, many companies are measuring what's called scope 3, which often includes business travel, so flying and taxis and hotels, et cetera, and commuting to work. And I think some are even starting to measure work from home, because that's obviously true, really business related. And so the employee does have an effect on the overall emissions claimed by the company. So we're very good at getting people to understand about renewable energy at home and about driving electric if they drive, and about reducing and optimizing flying.
Yeah. And I mean, and that makes it's, you know, I think there's so many positives to the work from home movement. And I think the reduction in our collective carbon footprint is just a massive one, in addition to kind of getting some of our so societal and like mental health benefits back. Along the topic of, you know, the education that you're providing to employees that are taking these courses, like, what are some of the things that you instruct people to do in these courses? Like, what are some options for people that are looking to, you know, reduce their carbon emissions? What do you tell people?
So let me tell you that, but before we go there, let me quickly mention, like, the other beauty of this is obviously attract and retain is really important. And so, you know, companies, particularly the younger staff, it's really important that their company is doing good work in the world and is a positive force. And so this stuff really helps in terms of that attract and retain. So we have a variety of workshops. In fact, we have about 20 of them. So it really depends on the client. We will customize things as well for the client. But generally, I'll tell you about the main ones, but generally we're trying to offer a wide variety of things such that there's an on-ramp for everyone. So we're just trying to help each person. They're going to be at a different place along the continuum. And so we just want to help them on their climate journey, moving to be more sustainable. So we try to offer lots. But in general, one of the important things that we work on is what we call the Big Six. So the Big Six are the six most impactful actions that one can take to reduce the footprint at home. So we have our own version of the Berkeley Cool Climate Calculator, which we've made fit us a little bit better.
That's cool.
Sleeker and easier. And so we tend to go through a process where we help people understand about what a carb calculator is, why one would care, how to put good data in, and we get people to run the calculator and understand their footprints, and most importantly, understand the larger components of their footprints so they can be strategic, focus on the stuff that actually matters, which, spoiler alert, isn't straws.
Yeah.
That's what we want to do, but there are some bigger fish to fry, probably the wrong analogy. So the Big Six are the six most impactful things for most people are switching to renewable energy. And so that could be community solar, that could be panels on your roof, that could be signing up from your utility.
Yeah.
The second of the Big Six would be driving electric. So reducing miles driven, and then electrifying as many of those miles as possible. So ideally getting yourself into at least a plug-in EV, if not a full EV. The third is moving to a plant-rich diet, which, you know, might be full vegan, might be vegetarian, might be weekday vegetarian, lots of different options. It depends on what you're after, but just helping people understand the huge impact of beef and lamb and other meats, but those two in particular. So plant-rich diet, reducing food waste, something that's come more to the forefront in the last number of years. It's just that it turns out food waste is has huge emissions, and so you want to try to reduce food waste, which also, of course, saves you money, which is cool. And composting, trying to move to ideally composting whatever food waste that you might have. So renewable energy, electric vehicles, diet related stuff, and then flying. So flying is actually tends to be, depending, can often be a very large component of people's footprint. So helping people understand that, and then giving them all sorts of tools to help them take less flights and to optimize the ones that they end up taking. So flying. Then we encourage, if you can afford it, not everyone can, we totally understand that, but if you can afford it, buying high quality offsets, ideally enough to zero out your overall footprint. And then finally, social norms. So building social norms is really important. We're going to get the whole world on board doing this stuff. It's going to be through social norms. So you really have to encourage people to share, and to share in a tactful, non-preachy, helpful, enthusiastic manner, so that people can learn from them and be inspired, and know that there are others out there doing the stuff that they're doing. So those are the big tips.
I love that. Well, I mean, though, all of those tips are ones that, you know, I think people have probably heard about in isolation, but hearing them all together, I think makes it sound very doable. And, you know, is in my mind, shouldn't seem overwhelming to people at all. And I like that, you know, it sounds like you give a variety of options for people. You're not just doing a one size fits all approach. So it's fascinating. Well, I mean, I can't believe it, but we're pretty much already up on our time. But the one thing we didn't get into that I typically like to ask all of our guests on the Good Together podcast is, you know, just was be really curious to know your take on what is exciting you the most about what's going on in the ethical and sustainable movement right now, because you've been a part of the movement for years and years. Like, what's different now? Like, what's exciting to you at this moment?
I would say what's most exciting to me is just the number of people involved, and the pace, and the amount of money. Just like there's been a real uptick. It's very different than it used to be. Even I feel like over the past few years. So like we have really high awareness. Like all of our institutions get it. Like the average person gets it. And there's so much innovation happening, whether it's batteries, whether it's food, whether it's renewable energy, whether it's the circular economy. There's just a ton going on there. So there's great science. There's great innovation. There's just like great companies. So it's just, it's on fire. People are going, it's probably another bad analogy. it's on. People are, and which is great. And, you know, we've got a long way to go in a short period of time. There's no doubt that it is terrifying. We're seeing some really horrific weather, and there'll be more of that. And people are getting after it, and governments are making commitments, and companies are making commitments, and individual people are making commitments, and really, really doing stuff. So there's just, I don't know, it feels like there's a lot of momentum. And hopefully we'll keep it up and increase it, and come up with some great, you know, technological fixes, but also just change how we live. The reality is we've lost our way a little bit.
Yeah,
we got confused about space and stuff, and just thinking that that's what makes us happy, when it's really relationships, it's experiences. It's not about that stuff. You know, happiness levels have been flatlined since the 50s. So we can absolutely live sustainable lives, very happy and healthy, and with plenty of money to go around, et cetera. So
I totally agree. I totally agree. And I'm super excited by the movement that's happening right now as well. And just in general, like, you know, some of the tips that you shared, I know our listeners are going to find super actionable. We will include links in our show notes at the end of this, you know, when we're done. And just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us, Graham.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate being able to talk to you. And yeah, hopefully we've been doing the sustainability dinners. And so I'd love to see if we can get you to one up in Seattle. And
yes.
If anyone has any questions, please reach out to me. I'm Graham at thecarbonauts.com. And yeah, I'd love to, we tend to work with big companies because we need to hit a lot of people. So happy to chat with anyone and appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Graham. Joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social, where I know you can find us at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.